Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in 1 Chronicles chapter 15. And in this chapter, David makes preparations to bring the Ark of the Lord into Jerusalem the right way. Now, as a reminder, David took this city from his enemies in a battle and chose to establish it as a city fortress, like a light on a hill. It would be the joy of the whole earth, and if you remember, there was a king in the Old Testament, way back in the times of Abraham, named Melchizedek. He was the king of Salem, and he was a warrior king who had fought on the side of Abraham during the War of the Ten Kings. Go back to Genesis if you want to know that story. But when Abraham meets Melchizedek, king of Salem, he gave him a tenth of all he had. Even the writer of Hebrews gives us an inkling that there was something more to Melchizedek than meets the eye. He was also a type of Jesus. A type, by the way, is when someone in the Old Testament resembles the ministry of Jesus before it happened. A prototype, if you will. Well, Melchizedek was a prototype of Christ. He was a warrior king who the scripture refers back to describe the ministry of Jesus in the book of Hebrews. Melchizedek ends up blessing Abraham, much like God does, and Abraham gives him a tenth of all he has. It's a picture of worship that the authors of Genesis knowingly included, knowing that their readers would draw the conclusion, this is a type of what we do for God and what God does for us. Now, interestingly enough, remember I said that Melchizedek was the king of Salem? Listen to the name of the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem. That's right. If you haven't had your head explode yet, it's kind of like the ending of The Usual Suspects or an M. Night Shyamalan film. I see dead people. That's right. Melchizedek was a king of Salem or Jerusalem. Right? The penny drops. And the king of Salem, Salem meaning peace, Prince of Peace, anyone? Anyone? You see, this city was significant. It was the place where the true warrior king, Jesus, of whom David himself, as a warrior king, was also a type of or a prototype of. This was the place that David would rule from. And of course, in heaven, John the Apostle sees the new Jerusalem coming down from heaven and encompassing the entire earth where God's glory shines out as it did, or it used to, out of the Holy of Holies in the temple in Jerusalem. Only in this case, in the new Jerusalem that covers the earth, his glory covers the earth so much that there is no need for the sun. I can't wait for that day where God's glory covers everything. That will be a day that we will surely celebrate for all eternity. But back to the celebration in Jerusalem, it was kind of like when the president rolls into your city, or the Pope. There was a parade, crowds, music, celebration, fanfare, and a lot of food. We're told all of this in this passage. In fact, there was a whole concert going on, and people were ecstatic. They were excited. This was God establishing him into the nation for the first time. This was when they had truly arrived. In other words, they had defeated their enemies, the Philistines. They had been set free from the yoke of bondage that we read about in Judges once and for all. This was the fulfillment of the promises to Abraham that I will bless you. You will become a nation. No one can stand against you. I will be your God and I will bless you that you will bless everyone around you. You see, before David, Israel had never been established. When they came into the land under Joshua's lead, they had to fight for every square inch. And because they had not been faithful, they quickly lost it. Whatever ground they took was short-lived. And of course, we enter immediately into the time of the judges. So between that time and this, there's only been a few generations since the end of Judges. Remember, the book of Ruth, which happens during that time, is David's great-great-grandmother. And so, here we are, now in Jerusalem, Israel, after being enslaved by the Midianites, at the time of David, finally enters the scene as the world conqueror. We read last chapter about the decisive battle fought with the Philistines when God marched through the tops of the trees and delivered a supernatural victory to deliver his people. And now was the time to worship him. The first thing David wants to do is bring the Ark of the Covenant into the city of Jerusalem. Remember, they carried the Ark into battle with them in that decisive victory. So now David wants to set the Ark up as a place in the center of worship. You see, the worship of God through the Ark would be physically placed in the center of the people in the city, and figuratively, the worship of God would become the center of the nation. It would be the center of Israel as a people. God was here being placed in his rightful place. And David, a man after God's own heart, loses himself in the excitement. We read in verse 27, "Now David was clothed in a robe of fine linen, as were all the Levites who were carrying the ark, and as were the musicians and Kenaniah, who was in charge of the singing of the choirs. David also wore a linen ephod. So all Israel brought up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord with shouts and the sounding of ram's horns and trumpets, of cymbals and the playing of lyres and harps. As the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window, and when she saw King David dancing and celebrating, she despised him in her heart." Now remember, David had forgotten who he was, that although a king, he was still a servant, that the king of the universe, he had laws and rules that needed to be obeyed. But now we see David not only understanding he's a servant, but dressing up like one, taking on the garments of a priest, and he might have gotten a little carried away, according to Samuel, when at one point he throws the ephod and the linen garment off, and he dances in front of the Lord out of pure ecstatic joy. You see, again, we see an unfolding of the concept of Christ as king in this story. After losing himself, David here models how we should act when the true king comes into our midst. There was no pomp or ceremony with David when it came to worshiping, and Michal, Saul's daughter, and David's first fiancée, long story, watches David through the window. She's not happy that he is acting beneath, quote, his station. Her father, she thinks, would have never done that. And that's exactly the point. David is nothing like Saul. In fact, he's a new type of king. He's not Jesus, but a type of him. You see, Jesus would humble himself, take on the form of a servant, according to Philippians 2, submit himself to the Father, and live solely for his Father's glory. Right now, at this moment, that's all David cares about. How about us? Is that how we are? Are we blessedly unaware of others as we enter into the presence of the Lord? Are we so mindful of God that we couldn't care less what anyone else thinks? My friend, that is true freedom, not freedom from the Philistines, although you can call your friends and people around you that if you want, but true freedom. God has come to set you free, to be so concerned with what he thinks, you don't give a rip about what anyone else does. And that, my friend, is true blessedness.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. Our apps are free, so tell a friend. We're listener supported, so thanks for giving. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.